Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. Quorum is present. Representative Herr, by request, moves the minutes of May 18, 2019. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have a series of resolutions which are in your packets and should have been distributed ahead of time. I don't remember the date, but previously we did, in Rules Committee, have a approval of the House budget. And so the changes that we are making today relate to staff compensation and changes to committee and minority caucus budgets. So the first one before us is the 2019 R10A, which relates to the minority caucus budget and the committee budgets. But I think before that, we should have the controller come forward and just talk a little bit about, provide us with a reminder of the budget that we proposed and how we ended up with doing our appropriation through state government finance. Representative Carlson.
She or you could tell us, because we did adopt committee budgets earlier, what some of the changes are. Quick glance, some of them seem the same, but some others seem to be slightly different.
Representative Carlson, we will certainly be doing that. We're going to give a little more broad context first.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Barb Jula, Controller for the House of Representatives. In the back of your packet, kind of the last set of documents, starting with a memo dated March 26, are the handouts that you were provided earlier in session. As you may recall, when we came before the committee last, we had talked about we are currently operating within an operating deficit of the House of about $2.3 million a year. Going into 2021, if that continued, we would quickly spend down our carry forward, but would not have addressed that operating shortfall, mostly driven by increases in member salary. We would not have addressed the staffing requests, primarily the 2-to-1 requests, and we would not have addressed the NCSL recommendations for salary and maintain or try to get to a competitive place within our compensation for staff. And so at that meeting, we did present the budget. The second page of that back set of handouts, looking like this, was the budget that was presented for a total toward the bottom of about $79,781,000 for the year. As you may recall, our budget is divvied up into three sections, the top two, salaries, benefits, and then travel and subsistence, are the members and staff salary, insurance, payroll taxes, per diem, and member expenses such as lodging and travel and such. Those two categories make up 97% of our budget. The remaining categories, not including carry forward items that are being invested in here, which are one time, make up about 4%, but those are your supplies, communication expenses, your printing, your IT. IT is probably the hugest part of that, your maintenance contracts, your things like that. And so, again, we adopted a budget which required additional resources. And so the third packet talked about the request for $11.5 million in additional appropriations. So there's a little narrative, and on the second page of that is the table for what that 11.5 would go for. 4.7 was to cover the increases to member salaries that were implemented both 2 years ago and the recent one that will come in effect July 1st. It was also to implement some staffing complement increases, including a 2-to-1 staffing ratio and some IT staff, and then a supervisor for the additional legislative assistance. It asked for $4.1 million for staffing salaries to implement a series of recommendations based on the NCSL study and to address some of the observations that the NCSL study had. I'll just briefly, the third page of that handout was some of the carry-forward investments we were requesting that will make over the next 2 years, including looking at some long overdue replacement of equipment and furniture, some IT and audiovisual enhancements, and some other equipment replacements.
Thank you, Ms. Jewett. So thanks for the background. And members, I would just like to point out we have additional sheets in the packets relating to the appropriation, the trend line on our carry forward and the kind of steep drop that's on. And then we also have two pages on the number of FTEs in the House of Representatives, just so that members can be aware of how that has changed over time. So we'll return to the R10A, 2019 R10A resolution. And Ms. Jewell, could you walk through that, and then I'll make the motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, this is revisiting the committee budgets. The only changes are found on line 36 and 37, tied to the minority budgets, reflecting a new amount of $50,000 for the GOP and $4,000 for the new GOP.
Discussion. Well, so I will move the we'll get to discussion. The 2019 R10A, I'll move adoption of that. Discussion, Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Julek, there is not reflected on this sheet of a majority caucus budget. Did we pass something before, or has that not been reflected? It's my understanding that it was around 100,000. Speaker's budget, it was called, or majority caucus budget during my time as speaker. So I'm just wondering what the process is now.
Mr. Chair, I have not seen a document in the, maybe Mr. McCormick can help me, but I'm not familiar with having ever seen a document with a majority budget being passed. There is a majority budget. It is tracked and reported to the majority, but this, I'm not aware of this process is how that gets adopted.
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, the majority budget is set as part of the overall House budget, and we, as long as I've been here, I've never adopted a specific line item for that.
Representative Dowd.
If we could just find out what that is, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Julek.
Mr. Chair, it's the spending trends within the majority budget are adopted throughout the budget, so it may include member travel, it may include some additional interim per diem, but it's based more on trend, and so it's kind of throughout the budget. I don't know.
Ms. Julek, I think the summary is basically that the majority budget is the House of Representatives budget, and there are specific line items for spending, but that the Speaker is in charge of the remainder of the House budget and makes decisions about where spending takes place. And so there isn't a specific line item. The reason you have a minority caucus line item is to ensure that the minority caucus has a certain amount that they can be sure that they have in their discretion. Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you reflected that appropriately, having been involved with it through the years. The reason for that is probably for the legislature in total, which would cover all members, there are sometimes unanticipated expenses that, as we sit here now, we might not be aware of. Just kind of keep in mind that's why it's a rather open, but the cap is the House budget.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering if this budget resolution would involve also the staffing complement, and if so, I just have a clarifying question about the chaperone program.
Mm-hmm. Representative Albright, the 2019 R10A is not specific to the staffing complement. We'll get to that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I,
Carlson.
May I ask what the changes were on the list here, and perhaps you could just repeat the only changes you said were the minority caucuses.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is
other than that, that everything else is the same for all of the committees.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, you can just do whatever we want. We're just going to stare at the puppy the rest.
Puppy should have been in the tribunals. Further discussion to the 2019 R10A. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. And the 2019 R10A is adopted. Next is the 2019 R15B. It should be in order in your packet. And I wonder if Ms. Jewell, if you could walk us through that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, if you may recall, the NCSL study had some specific recommendations in terms of our salary ranges, both what the starting and ending point of the range is, what the width level was, and then how certain positions should be falling within our classification series. And so attached to the R15B is the table from that study that reflects their recommendations of both the range changes, which they're proposing, and any item in red, although I don't know if the red clearly showed through on every copy, it's more of a darker font, where the classification would be changing and moving up. And so this resolution would request that the House adopt those recommendations of salary range adjustments and reclassification of the 21 positions as reflected in the attached exhibit, and that the width of the ranges be within that 80% that they recommended. And then in addition, because we're paid on a 24 pay period cycle, just directing the Human Services Director to make the numbers work, basically. And so there may be a little rounding going on in there.
So the chair moves adoption of the 2019 R15B. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Next in line is the 2019 R14A. And I wonder if, I don't know if Ms. Knight wants to join Ms. Julek in explaining this, but I leave it to the two of you to decide. Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Kelly Knight. I'm the Director of HR for the House. And the resolution of compensation of House employees that you have before you is for 2019 and also 2020 and through 2020. Walking through it, effective July 1, 2019, employees will receive the greater of either being brought to the new minimum of the ranges that were just adopted or a 2% general increase. And also committee stipends will also be increased. We are not increasing the NCSL ranges. Some of you may remember in the past we typically would apply a general increase to the ranges, but since NCSL is saying these ranges are effective July 1, then we're not doing that at this time. Also, too, effective July 1st, we are going to also give an equity adjustment. In the past, we have had issues with compression when the ranges have been changed at the bottom, especially, and so we are going to give an equity adjustment to all permanent staff who, for every 2 years, they will get 0.5%, and that's to readjust that and add a little bit more space due to those minimums being increased. The total equity increase cannot exceed 3%, so that would be someone that had 12 years or more would be at that 3%. Also, too, that equity adjustment does not apply to the committee stipends. Effective January 1, 2020, there will be a merit pool. Those merit pools are assigned to the caucuses as well as all the departments. That merit pool will be 3.5%, and the caucuses and also the departments have the ability to distribute that anywhere from 0 to 4% for staff, and that's based on their performance review. We, on July 1, 2020, we are going to repeat the general increase of 2%. However, since the ranges will now be 1 year old, we are going to also increase the ranges by 2%. Effective then January 1 of 2021, all staff will be once again eligible for that merit pool based on the 3.5%. And just as two side notes, one is this applies to the merit increase will apply to staff who have been on since April 1st of either 2019 or April 1st of 2020. So any of the new staff that are hired, let's say in October, will not be eligible for the merit increase. Also, too, any staff member whose merit increase or equity adjustment would take them above the maximum for their range, that amount would be paid out as a one-time lump sum, so it would not go into the base, but they will still receive that as a one-time.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. I will move adoption. The chair will move adoption of 2019 R14A. Discussion. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain which of these things are new and which of these things are maybe a slight change or completely, new or a slight change or have been there before? Of the things you just discussed.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, in the past we've had general increases. We've also had merit increases. The structure of the merit increases, very similar to what we've done almost during my entire tenure here with, if someone reaches a max, it would be paid out as a lump sum. We have done equity adjustments in the past, but that is less frequent.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically to the merit increases, is that the same as we've done in the past where it's 3.5% for meeting expectations? Not exceeding, but meeting expectations. Is that what we've done in the past?
Mr. Chair, members, it has, our increases have been anywhere from zero to above, I want to say back many years ago, it was even 4%. So it's not outside the realm. The last merit increase that we did was a 2.5% pool. But we didn't have the funds to do more than that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so kind of how you described it is a little bit different than what's written. What it's actually written, it says up to 3.5% for meeting expectations, and then you can go up to 4% if you exceed expectations, which is a little different than you described it, because just meeting expectations, it seems like a, like you said, 2.5 is what we had done in the past, but 3.5 just to meet expectations just seems like that was outside of what we've done in the past. I'm just wondering if, can you think of any other examples where we've actually done 3.5% merit increase for meeting expectations? I understand the 4% for exceeding, consistently exceeding. That's what it says in the paper, but just wondering if you could help me understand that, the difference here.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, we have done more than 3.5 in the past. I don't see every review, so I don't know exactly what supervisors do, but recently we did 2.5, but we've done 3.5 or more in years past. I can certainly get the data on that.
Ms. Knight, I think it would be helpful if you just describe how the merit increases are determined, like what the process is internally. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that goes to what Representative O'Neill is talking about.
Mr. Chair and members, so each of the caucuses and departments are given a merit pool. My department, for instance, would be given a merit pool of 3.5% of the salaries. I, as a supervisor, then am required to set up standards for that to award that. And there is I have a rather extensive review process. I know the caucuses ask for member feedback in order to prepare that review. In the caucuses, the process is that supervisors will go to the executive director, make their recommendations. The executive director will review that so that there is consistency within the caucus. Those reviews are delivered and made sure that they're consistent, that there is not a situation where somebody needs improvement and the review states something else. Based on that, then the caucus awards the percentage, and they can't spend over the 3.5 pool. They don't have to spend it all. If there are a number of people that perhaps need improvement, there's no requirement to spend all the money. Mm-hmm. But there is a process within each of the caucuses to review that, to make sure that there's consistency.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's what she was describing is rather different than what's on the paper, and you know what we're passing is on the paper because it says literally you're just meeting expectations and you get this, the merit. And so, and then it said the exception would be if you consistently exceed expectations, you can get up to 4%. I just wanted clarity because that just seemed a little different than what she was describing, and so that's what the question was about. Thank you.
Representative O'Neill, I think it also it might be helpful to know that it says that a person who meets expectations or better is eligible. It doesn't mean that they're automatically going to get it. It just means that that qualifies them for consideration and that the discretionary process of supervisors is what determines it. Right. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Knight, so as I look at these three provisions on the front page, so if a person is below the salary range that we just adopted, they're going to receive a minimum 2% increase annually to move them towards getting into that salary range, or that would be my first question, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright. So what will happen on July 1 is staff will either receive 2%, so if they are maybe at the midpoint of their range and the new range is still below, the minimum of the new range is below where they're at, they will receive 2%. If someone is at the current minimum and it takes 3% to get them to the new minimum, they will get 3%. So they have to be, come July 1, they have to be at the minimum of the range. So all staff will be at least at the minimum of the range. Those staff, if they get 2% or more to move them to the new minimum of the range, they will not get the general increase. So the two will not be combined.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first ladder, if you will, that they're going to realize is to get them to the low end of the new salary range. So question, what if it takes 6% to move them to the low end of that salary range? Do they receive a 6% increase?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, they would, because all staff need to at least be at the minimum hiring range. If we did not do that, then the hires that you will be hiring, let's say October, November, for the 2-to-1 would actually be brought in higher than that, those staff.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brings clarity to that provision. So then let's use that same example with that individual receiving it because for some reason they've fallen through the cracks. They get a 6% increase. Then you move to the next provision of a one-half equity. Does that play with the 6%? If just to get them into the range?
I'm sorry, Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, the equity adjustment is based on tenure, so someone would have to do 2 full years in order to be there. It is probably going to be a more unusual occasion that somebody would get the equity and be brought to the minimum. Mm-hmm. But if that occurred, if they had were brought to the new minimum and had 2 years of service, they would be eligible for 0.5 on top of that.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Knight, please understand I'm not trying to begrudge paying people fairly for this, but I think the mechanics of three different kind of moving gears, if you will, on this. We are stacking them, and I'm not opposed to that, but I think from a super advisory perspective as well as for the people that would be implicated by this, I think it's important to appreciate that we talk about this and get a fair approximation in terms of how would it be explained to them. So fully in favor, I just wanted to make sure we have clarity.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to give a little perspective as somebody who was a supervisor using this same merit system, and it is very similar, if not exactly the same, to I think we've had multiple bindings in the past. And just to share the perspective that I think it's a really valuable tool to the merit increase in terms of how we do our review with our employees to value those that are really exceeding and retain those that are our top employees, but then also to work with our staff to do staff development and to go through that process and chart out ways for improvement. And, you know, as a director, I remember using that whole range from 0 to 4% with my staff members, and it really found it to be an effective way to value our staff that are doing amazing work and help professionally develop folks that maybe aren't exceeding expectations. And the level, I want to say that we've had 3.5% multiple biennials. I can't remember exactly. I know for sure that it's been in that realm. And just from the perspective as someone who's been in that role as a supervisor, it really is an effective way for us to value, retain, and expand our staff. And so happy to support it.
Further discussion of the 2019 R14A. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the 2019 R14A is adopted. The final resolution, and we can get on to discussing the staffing that you wanted to discuss, Representative Albright, afterwards. But the final resolution is the 2019 P8A. And I don't know, I think maybe Ms. Knight, you want to explain that for us, please.
Mr. Chair and members, one of the items that NCSL looked at when they did a review of our compensation was promotional adjustments for the House and what our practice was. During some very lean budget years, we moved to every 3 year mark for people being able to go from a legislative assistant one to a legislative assistant two and other multi-level positions, and that amount being 4%. NCSL found us to be out of step with our legislative companions, and so had suggested that in order to keep pace, we should move that to every 2 years for a promotional opportunity, and these are not guaranteed. They still have to have a review. They still have to have meets or exceeds performance. And that the percentage increase that comes along with that would be a 5% increase, or the minimum of the range, the range that they're going to.
So I will move adoption of the 2019 P8A. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
No. The policy is approved. And Representative Albright, I think you had some questions about how we, I think you wanted to talk about the chaperone for the PAGE program, and maybe Ms. Knight or Ms. Juluk, you could just talk about the process going forward for the increased staff complement.
Mr. Chair and members, as far as the increased staff complement, this is coming in kind of two waves. One, we are, both caucuses have made a number of people who are currently on staff have moved their status to permanent, effective actually June 17th. That ensures that their benefits go into effect right away, but it also ensures that they're permanent so that this resolution that we just passed will clearly cover that. So that's the first wave. In addition to that, The second wave of people to fill out the 2-to-1 will be hired probably, we're thinking, October, November. We need a little lead time to secure things like workstations, chairs, and computers for these folks. So, but they will be, the plan is to have them up to speed in order for session to begin.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question actually was for the Mr. Meyerson, possibly, relevant to, I know that in previous testimony, he expanded on the process of pages staying over at the Capitol Ridge a bit unchaperoned, and we've not incurred or suffered from any unusual circumstances with those. But I'm also wondering, with regard to chaperones that would be hired, particularly to watch over and kind of shepherd those folks, what's the process for hiring those folks, and what type of background check or assurance we have that we're putting the right people on the job?
Mr. Meyerson, please identify yourself for the record and answer the question.
Chair Winkler, members, I'm Bob Meyerson, Chief Sergeant of Arms, and oversee the high school PAGE program. And we did recognize that we have some vulnerabilities, and there's a need to make some significant changes to reduce those vulnerabilities. And we looked at various options and felt the best option going forward would be to hire chaperones that would be with the students that choose to stay at the hotel after hours, and doing that in two shifts, and have both the male and female. The background investigation would be such that would be required to oversee and supervise. I think we take our lead much to, from youth and government and the standards that they use. They have a ratio of chaperones to students, and it'd be a huge step forward, I think, in providing safety for the students and giving them some direction. In addition, perhaps give us some opportunities to have some after-hours experiences for the kids, the students that we have a void, and it'd be a great opportunity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright.
Mr. Meyerson, is that session specific or for the biennium then?
That
Mr. Meyerson. Those chaperones would be hired?
Mr. Meyerson.
Chair, Representative, it would be for each session. We would anticipate hire session only staff. Yes.
Further discussion? Representative Doubt.
Could they also chaperone the members?
Representative Doubt, you do yours, we'll do ours.
I'm trying.
Further discussion. Well, I just want to thank Ms. Knight and Ms. Julek for guiding us through this process from the beginning of session and making sure that this NCSL study was done. I think that has been handled extremely well, and I think by laying out all the information and providing lots of guidance and openness to the committee, we've managed to, I think, build a lot of confidence that we have a competitive disadvantage in the House right now, that people do need a market-based increase, that we're providing that, and we have managed to move a House budget forward that allows us to do that. So I want to thank you for your leadership on that, and I want to thank members for coming here today so soon after session to make sure that we get this going for our staff. I do think it has been a good committee this session related to running the House of Representatives. I want to thank you all for your cooperation on that. I know we all support the people who do the work here. And I just want to express my personal regard for all of you and the work that you've done on this committee this year. So without any further discussion, we are adjourned.